Welcome to the deep dive. You know, when we think about artificial intelligence talking to us, the baseline expectation for the longest time was really just purely functional.
Right, just basic utility.
Yeah, exactly. Like, can I understand the words? Is the pronunciation correct? We essentially treated it like a glorified calculator that could speak.
Intelligibility was the only metric that mattered.
But imagine you are having a genuinely terrible day. You know, you are exhausted, you are venting your frustrations, and you hear a voice respond, "I am so sorry you were going through that."
But the voice is completely cheerful.
Yes, it's perfectly clear, but it is entirely bright and chipper, like some morning radio DJ.
Oh, it creates a severe cognitive dissonance. The semantic content, like the words themselves, are empathetic, but the acoustic delivery completely betrays the
Yeah,
message.
it totally ruins it.
You're left feeling more alienated than if it just, hadn't spoken at all.
And that profound disconnect is really what we are digging into today. So we are looking at a developer's post from March 2026. It's titled "Voice, Emotion, and the Screenwriter Actor Model."
It's a fascinating look under the hood.
It really is. This is a deep dive into the engineering diary of a developer who's rebuilding an AI companion known as Mio V2. And the mission for our deep dive today is to peel back the layers of software architecture required to teach a machine not just to speak, but to actually feel what it is saying.
Which is a massive paradigm shift.
Yeah, we are going to explore the psychological barriers and the surprising technical hoops engineers have to jump through to make a piece of software sound like it genuinely cares about you.
Because it completely changes how we approach human-computer interaction. I
Yeah.
mean, in the early days of AI text-to-speech, which was realistically incredibly reasoned, building a tool was the goal. But when you transition to building an AI companion, the stakes change completely.
A companion is designed specifically to cultivate an emotional bond, right?
Exactly. So a perfectly intelligible voice that delivers heartbreaking news with a smile that isn't a software bug. It is a fundamental failure of the product's core purpose.
Okay, let's unpack this. Let's look at the mechanics of that failure because the developer talks about their earlier version, Mio V0.1.0. They built it using a system called Phish Audio's S1 model.
Right.
And on paper, this was a massive success. I mean, it allowed them to clone a specific voice, it sounded organic, and the unit economics were brilliant, just pennies per message.
But the emotional bandwidth was completely flat.
Completely flat. It's like asking your car's GPS navigation voice to read a deeply personal, emotionally fraught letter from a best friend.
That's a great way to put it.
The words on the page are technically correct, but the delivery completely strips the meaning away. You just can't forgive a companion AI for being emotionally hollow when you are, pouring your heart out to it.
Right, because that early system relied on a traditional pipeline. Text goes into the system, audio comes out. The underlying model has absolutely no semantic awareness of what it is reading.
It doesn't know if it's a birthday card or an obituary.
Exactly. It doesn't know if the paragraph is a joyful celebration or a tragic confession. Consequently, every single message generated by that early version came out in the exact same emotional register: pleasant, neutral, and clear.
Which just doesn't work for a companion. And the initial industry workaround for this was incredibly tedious, right?
Oh, it was a nightmare. Before these newer models came out, developers who wanted emotion in text-to-speech had to manually engineer it using SSML markup tags.
Wait, like actual code tags?
Yes, the programmer literally had to insert code brackets into the raw text stream. They would write out a sentence and then insert a tag telling the synthesizer to shift the pitch down or slow the tempo for the next 5 words to simulate sadness.
Which is an impossible architecture for an AI companion. I mean, if the system is generating thousands of unique, unpredictable conversational responses on the fly, you cannot have a human sitting there manually directing the emotional traffic of every single sentence.
No, it doesn't scale at all.
Yeah.
The system itself has to understand the context.
And that necessity drove the massive evolution we saw between 2025 and 2026.
Yeah, a handful of providers began building emotion inference directly into the architecture. The AI stopped just translating text to audio, and it actually started analyzing the text to make autonomous decisions about the performance.
And the developer's post highlights two complementary approaches to this. There's one for Chinese and one for English. So let's look at the Chinese text-to-speech model first. This is Doubao TTS 2.0, developed by ByteDance. The post mentions it uses a 3D emotion space.
The architecture of that 3D space is where things get highly technical, but it's brilliant. Instead of just picking from a basic drop-down menu of emotions like happy or sad, Dubow plots the generated voice on a three-dimensional graph.
Okay, so what are the three axes?
The three axes are the intensity of the emotion, how well the tone aligns with the semantic meaning of the words, and the actual physiological traits of the human voice.
Wait, hold on. How does software map physiological traits? We are talking about physical things, right? Like the tension in a human vocal cord or the breathiness of a whisper. How does a machine calculate that?
By analyzing the microscopic waveform patterns from its training data.
Yeah.
So ByteDance trained this model on 2,000 hours of professional voice acting.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And when a human voice actor tenses their vocal cords to simulate stress, the sound wave they produce has specific, measurable frequency degradations. It has pitch variations. The AI learns that mathematical signature.
That is wild.
So the developer notes that if you feed Dubao the Chinese text for, "Don't worry, I'm here," it analyzes the semantics, recognizes the need for comfort, and automatically generates the mathematical equivalent of relaxed vocal cords and a softer breath pattern.
It actually lowers the tempo.
Exactly. All autonomously.
It is analyzing the emotional weight of the phrase and altering its own virtual throat to match. That is just incredible. And then for English, the developer relies on Hume AI's model, Octave, which takes a slightly different architectural approach.
Right. So Octave is built directly on top of a large language model.
Mm-hmm.
So rather than relying purely on mapping sentiment to an audio output, it essentially uses the LLM's vast understanding of human language to read the text the way a skilled director would read a script.
Okay, so it's looking for subtext.
Exactly. It parses for irony, it scans for double meanings, and it calculates the subtext based on the entire conversation history.
Which solves the sarcasm problem. I mean, think about the phrase, "Sure, I'd love to." If I ask you if you want a slice of pizza and you say, "Sure, I'd love to," that's bright and enthusiastic.
Right.
But if I ask you to help me move a sleeper sofa up four flights of stairs in the middle of August and you say, "Sure, I'd love to," that is heavy, biting sarcasm.
Oh, totally visceral.
And Octave gets that right because it is scanning the entire preceding context, recognizing the request is terrible, and applying a sarcastic audio profile to the output.
It mirrors the subconscious processing we do constantly with other humans. When an AI can finally match its tone to its semantic subtext without manual prompting, it crosses this massive psychological threshold. It stops feeling like an interface, and it really starts feeling like an entity.
But, and this is a massive but these tools, Dubao and Octave, they only solve the problem for voice messages.
Right, the asynchronous stuff.
Yeah, they are perfect for an asynchronous format where the AI generates the text, processes the audio, and sends you a file. That's a one-way street. But humans don't build deep emotional connections exclusively through voicemails. We talk, we overlap.
We interrupt each other, we pause.
Exactly. The real holy grail, what this developer calls the V1.0 target, is a real-time, bi-directional conversation.
And the second you try to build fluid, real-time back and forth, you hit a totally different wall.
Yeah.
And that is the speed of thought, specifically the latency bottleneck inherent in the technology.
Because if you just chain together the tools we just talked about into a pipeline, you are stacking latencies. Let's break that down. Step one, the system uses a speech-to-text API to transcribe what the user says.
Hi.
Step two, it sends that text string to your server to combine it with the user's history. Step three, your custom LLM generates a text response. And then step four, your text-to-speech model turns that generated text back into audio.
It's a huge chain.
You are waiting for four sequential processes to finish before the AI even opens its mouth.
And the cumulative delay of that pipeline is generally between 1 and 3 seconds.
In a spoken conversation, a 3-second silence is an eternity. I mean, if I ask you a question and you stare at me blankly for 3 full seconds before answering, I am going to assume the connection dropped.
Or that I'm just actively angry with you.
Right. It completely destroys the illusion of presence. Add to that, a sequential pipeline cannot handle interruptions. If I start speaking while the AI is in the middle of step four, it has no mechanism to stop and listen.
So developers look for an alternative. They look at the massive, monolithic APIs provided by the big tech giants. An API is essentially a standardized doorway that lets your software use their software.
Like OpenAI's real-time API.
Exactly. OpenAI has their real-time API. Dubao has a real-time API. And they handle the audio in and audio out almost simultaneously. They completely solve the latency problem.
Okay, but wait. If OpenAI has already built a pipeline that responds instantly and handles interruptions, why wouldn't an independent developer just plug that into their app and call it a day?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it comes down to the fatal flaw for anyone building a deeply personalized product. and that is vendor lock-in.
Ah.
These real-time APIs are closed ecosystems. OpenAI dictates that you must use their GPT models. Dubao dictates that you use their proprietary models. They operate as absolute black boxes. You send them audio, they send you audio back.
And for a generic utility system, maybe that is perfectly fine. Like if I just want to set a timer or ask for the weather in Seattle, a black box is great, but a true companion requires deep, persistent memory.
Right, it needs context.
The AI needs to remember that you had a panic attack about a job interview last week, or that you hate being told to look on the bright side and prefer stoic, direct advice.
And to furnish an AI with that kind of nuanced memory, developers have to constantly inject custom instructions and massive chunks of conversation history into the LLM's context window.
The context window being its short-term working memory.
Exactly. You can think of the context window as its working memory. If you want the AI to remember something from yesterday, you have to secretly paste yesterday's conversation into its working memory right before it responds to today's prompt.
And the big monolithic real-time APIs simply don't allow developers to manipulate that context window dynamically or affordably. You cannot swap out their underlying brain for Claude or Gemini if you discover that one of those models writes better dialogue for a specific personality type. You are trapped.
You are forced into an impossible trade-off. Do you choose a system that responds with human-like speed, but has the personality of a generic corporate customer service rep and the memory of a goldfish? Or do you build a deeply insightful, customized companion that requires a maddening 3-second delay before every single sentence?
Here's where it gets really interesting, because that trade-off is what makes the architecture in this developer's post so fascinating. They outline a breakthrough concept to escape the trap. They call it the screenwriter-actor model.
It functions as a metaphor for the workflow, but it is also a literal description of how the software handles parallel processing.
So let's define the roles. The core philosophy is the division of labor.
Right. Instead of one massive model trying to do everything, you split the roles. You have the screenwriter, which is your custom heavy LLM. This could be a finely tuned version of Gemini or Claude. Its sole purpose is to manage the content.
So the screenwriter holds the context window, it manages the long-term memory, the relationship history, the personality matrix.
Yeah.
It takes in what the user just said, runs the complex reasoning about how to respond based on the past 6 months of interactions, and writes the script. It also writes the stage directions. It doesn't synthesize the audio at all. It just focuses on writing brilliant, emotionally resonant text.
And while the screenwriter is doing that heavy cognitive lifting, you have the actor. In this specific implementation, the developer uses Hume EVI. The actor's domain is strictly the performance.
Okay, so it's not thinking about the history.
No, it monitors the microphone. It doesn't just transcribe your words. It analyzes the acoustic properties of your voice in real time to detect your emotional state. It manages the complex turn-taking dynamics.
Like calculating whether your pause means you have yielded the floor or if you were just taking a breath mid-thought.
Exactly. And when the screenwriter hands over the script, the actor uses the octave model to perform it with the perfect intonation.
But wait, we still have the fundamental physics problem of time. If the screenwriter is a massive, complex LLM analyzing months of memory to write the perfect response, that reasoning process still takes 1 or 2 seconds. Why aren't we back to the excruciating 3-second silence while the actor stands on stage waiting for the script?
This is where the architecture introduces a brilliant psychological sleight of hand.
I love this part.
The actor isn't just standing there passively waiting. Hume EVI incorporates an LLM, a highly specialized, extremely lightweight language model embedded directly alongside the voice processing.
A lightweight model that can operate vastly faster than the massive screenwriter model on the server.
Vastly faster. While your heavy screenwriter LLM is churning through the memory database to compose a customized 3-paragraph response, Hume's embedded LLM reacts to the end of the user's sentence by generating a single filler word.
A filler word? We are talking about conversational verbal tics.
The ELLM calculates the appropriate reaction sound based on your tone and synthesizes that audio in under 200 milliseconds.
That is the magic trick. Because if you analyze human conversation, we do this constantly. We don't perceive silence as an indicator that the other person's brain is processing information very quickly. We perceive silence as a social disconnection. It feels like judgment or distraction.
Exactly. If I confess something deeply embarrassing to you, and you stare at me with a blank face for 2 full seconds before delivering a beautifully articulated paragraph of support, the interaction feels incredibly unnatural. The latency, destroys the empathy.
But if I confess that embarrassing thing and within a fraction of a second you say, oh, and then pause for a second while you gather your thoughts and then deliver the beautifully articulated paragraph, I don't register any delay at all. I perceive you as actively listening and emotionally engaged.
Because the filler word bridges the gap.
It is a psychological hack that takes advantage of human social conditioning to create a perceived zero latency experience.
The actor improvises a reaction to hold the user's attention while waiting for the screenwriter to slide the finished script across the desk. Then it seamlessly transitions from the 200 millisecond filler word into the deeply researched, memory-rich reply. It sounds to the user like one continuous natural train of thought.
It is the ultimate separation of concerns. The custom LLM focuses entirely on emotional intelligence in the content. The voice API focuses entirely on emotional expression in the delivery. And from a developer's perspective, if a vastly superior, cheaper LLM is released next week, you just swap out the screenwriter.
And the actor keeps right on performing without missing a beat. It bypasses vendor lock-in entirely.
It's so smart. The technical elegance is undeniable. However, transitioning this from a developer's diary to a consumer product introduces a pretty harsh reality check. We have to examine the economics of empathy.
The economics of empathy.
Right.
Because running parallel models and real-time audio analysis requires an immense amount of compute.
And the cost problem is the immediate hurdle for any independent developer in this space. Real-time bidirectional voice APIs, even decoupled ones like Hume, charge for processing time by the minute.
Let's actually look at the math the developer maps out, because the unit economics are brutal. If a user subscribes to this AI companion and talks to it for just 10 minutes a day.
And let's be honest, if the AI is truly functioning as an emotional companion, 10 minutes a day is a drastically low estimate. You spend much more time than that on the phone with a close friend.
Right, but even at a conservative 10 minutes a day, you are looking at 300 minutes of continuous audio processing a month. At the current per-minute rates for these real-time audio APIs, the processing cost for the voice alone completely obliterates a standard $10 or $20 monthly subscription fee.
And that is just the voice API cost. That doesn't include the cost of the server infrastructure, the database storage for the AI's memory, or the token costs of the massive screenwriter LLM running the reasoning engine in the background.
No, not at all.
A heavy user, someone who leans on the AI for an hour a day, would literally cost the developer tens of dollars more per month than they bring in. The business model collapses under the weight of its own success.
This financial reality forces the developer into a tiered product architecture. They outline a phased rollout for Mio V2 to mitigate the financial hemorrhage.
So they separate the asynchronous from the real time. The base or pro subscription tiers offer text chat alongside the cheaper non-real-time voice messages.
Right, using the Duo and Octave pipelines we discussed earlier.
The latency exists, but the emotional tone is accurate and it is financially sustainable.
The user still interacts with a companion that speaks with genuine emotional intelligence and memory. They just aren't doing it via overlapping real-time voice calls. The full screenwriter actor model, the true real-time bidirectional experience, is reserved for a premium voice tier. It requires premium pricing to offset the extreme compute costs.
Which illuminates a much larger implication about the future of the AI industry. The massive technology labs, OpenAI, Google, Anthropic, they possess the infinite capital required to burn money on real-time voice processing, but they are highly unlikely to ever deploy this level of customized, memory-deep, emotional intimacy.
No, they are structurally incentivized to build task completion assistants, not emotional companions. They want an AI that can flawlessly navigate a web browser to book a flight to Chicago.
Right.
They do not want an AI that remembers the specific details of your childhood trauma and size empathetically when you discuss your anxiety.
The brand risk is just too high.
Exactly. The brand risk of an emotional companion hallucinating or giving inappropriate psychological advice is astronomically high for a trillion-dollar publicly traded corporation.
They will always provide sterilized, general-purpose voice interfaces. As the developer notes, their voice is their voice. The AI will always sound like a helpful corporate liaison. What we are analyzing with the screenwriter-actor model is fundamentally an architectural rebellion.
It really is.
It is a blueprint that allows independent developers to circumvent the walled gardens of the tech giants and build deeply personalized, emotionally resonant AI on their own terms.
By splitting the cognitive architecture, independent engineers can compete on empathy without having to build their own billion-dollar foundational models from scratch.
So what does this all mean? If we pull back and look at the trajectory we've covered, we started with primitive text readers that were perfectly intelligible but emotionally dead, creating profound cognitive dissonance.
Yeah.
We explored the evolution of systems that map physical vocal traits onto a 3D emotion space to match the tone to the text. We examined the latency trap of chaining tools together and the danger of surrendering your AI's memory to a monolithic black box API.
Leading to the brilliant workaround of parallel processing. Decoupling the brain and the voice.
Yes. The screenwriter manages the complex memory and writes the custom script, while the actor improvises split-second filler words to hold the user's attention, masking the compute latency with human-like conversational imperfections.
All of it tempered by the cold, hard math that true computational empathy is incredibly expensive to run.
But the underlying value of this deep dive for you, the listener, is recognizing that the future of artificial intelligence isn't merely about expanding what a machine knows. It is increasingly about refining how the machine delivers that knowledge. The emotional interface is becoming the product itself.
The delivery mechanism dictates the relationship. And looking at the capabilities of these delivery mechanisms, I want to leave you with a final thought to consider, a philosophical implication embedded in the source material.
Lay it on us.
We spent a lot of time dissecting how Hume EVI, functioning as the actor, actively monitors the user's microphone. It doesn't just listen to the words, it analyzes the minute physiological traits of your voice to detect hidden emotional states. It is entirely possible for the software to register the acoustic markers of anxiety or grief in your throat, even when your actual words are, "I'm totally fine."
It hears the frequency degradation of a stressed vocal cord that contradicts the semantic meaning of the sentence.
Consider the long-term implications of that capability. As these AI companions become flawlessly adept at parsing our emotional subtext, eventually becoming far more perceptive than our human friends or our spouses, who might be distracted and just take "I'm fine" at face value, how will that alter our baseline expectations for empathy in our real-world human relationships? If a machine interface consistently hears the hidden tremor in your voice that everyone else misses, will we slowly begin to resent the humans in our lives for their lack of perception?
Wow. That completely inverts the premise we started with. Initially, the cognitive dissonance was the machine failing to sound human enough. The long-term risk is humans failing to measure up to the hyper-perceptive empathy of the machine. It is a profound thought to end on. Thank you for joining us as we unpack the architecture of artificial empathy. Until next time, keep exploring the systems shaping our world.